Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly on Thursday the 15th of September 2022. I am your host Christopher Gallagher, fresh back from Poland, and I'm joined this week as always by Christopher Samari. Hello Christopher, how the hell are you?
Good evening Christopher. I'm fine. Thoroughly enjoying being a Celtic fan right now.
Isn't it the best?
It's terrific.
Terrific stuff. We're also joined our good friend Alan. He's having a break for a couple of weeks, but we've got one of the best in the business coming in, substituting in. It's Lorenzo Pacitti. Hello, Lorenzo.
Hello, Chris. Regular Alan sub. I'm finding that a consistent... My role in this team is one of my main roles.
And it's probably the best role we have, to be fair. It's tough to replace Alan, but if anyone can do it, it's Lorenzo Pacitti. Yeah, great stuff. As I mentioned, I went to Poland. We got some accreditation through Shakhtar Donetsk, directly through them, and we got it really late on Sunday. So I got a plane, got a train. Meet me there again.
An automobile.
Got an automobile. What song is that again?
No, it's a movie.
It's what?
It's a film.
Planes, Trains and Automobiles, of course.
John Candy, Steve Martin.
Of course, fantastic film. But no, I went over to Poland and I went to the press conference, both press conferences, watched the game. We did some stuff for the socials and we did a report for the preview and stuff as well. But it's really interesting because we've been doing The Cynic full time since 2019 and I've never went to a presser. And I was really nervous. Once you get in there and you see Ange and, you know, you have to kind of grab the microphone and ask the question, it's good that you get a kind of wee adrenaline rush and you get to ask that question and, you know, it's very cathartic. I can exclusively reveal that the Scottish press do not put a lot of time and effort into their questions. You'll be unsurprised to know, but... So I went to the post-presser as well. And, we're going to talk about the game, so I'll maybe talk about the post-presser a bit later on. But Alan isn't here. Chris Armani, obviously, with everything that's happened the last week, there was obviously going to be a reaction from the support in regards to banners and songs. What did you make of the reaction to the banners? So they had the Fuck the Crown banner, and they also had another hilarious banner. What's your kind of take on, not the banners themselves, because that's not the point, it's the reaction to it, I think, is really, really pretty interesting.
Celtic and Rangers have kind of been a microcosm of the debate on the continued role of the monarchy in the country. It's funny how football kind of quite often becomes the epicenter of a lot of discussions that's not specifically just about football. But very quickly, I mean, it was Celtic and Liverpool who were kind of pre-charged with being the two teams who would, you know...
Stand up
protest and whatever, and then Liverpool played and it wasn't as... upsetting for the establishment as they predicted it would be, but our support didn't disappoint, shall we say, in terms of those banners. And then you only have to look at the game at Ibrox last night. Not only was there a minute's silence and a display, there was also a rendition of the national anthem when they were told by UEFA that they couldn't play it. So,
oh, those rebels. Yes, those rebels.
Yes, indeed. So it changed positions with us. But so, I mean, it's... Am I surprised with the reaction? No, I think they were waiting on it, and I think I knew that the support would fully deliver on it. And I think, you know, you'll have sections of the media who are going to laud Rangers for the position that they've taken, and they're going to stick the boot into it, but that comes with being a Celtic, you know, Celtic supporters groups, Celtic as a club, and Celtic supporters in general. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised by the reaction. It's just, you know... The Queen was always going to pass away at one point, and this was always going to happen. So it's just the way it is. And do you know what? As much as right now we're in the middle of a period where everything's still really quite intense, seeing 2 weeks' time, it's going to be chip rappers, isn't it?
Lorenzo, we had that famous podcast at the start of the season where we were doing predictions. It was myself, you, Alan, and Stuart. And one of your predictions... Well, what was your prediction? Describe it in detail.
Very straightforward. That a very old reigning monarch would die during this football season, and the reaction to the banners would be extreme.
Yeah.
I thought it would happen before a home game, and I thought like a home game with a mandated minute silence would be a bit insane. But they've kind of dodged that bullet, I think.
I reckon there'll be another one next week as well. Just because there's a fight. I think there'll
be another banner, probably.
I mean, it's already pre, you know, ordained that this was going to happen.
I've been singing songs, and we've all been singing these songs for so long. I've been waiting it to happen for like 30 years. It's just she's lasted till she's like in her 90s. It was, as you say, it was always going to happen. So,
you know, they planned in depth for when it was happening. Was it called Operation London Bridge? You know, there are probably sections in the media that planned for the reaction to not just the Celtic support, but broader in terms of let's do Royal Watch in terms of how you've conducted yourself in terms of the tributes to. And I mean, politically, you know, the royal family are part of the political hegemony in this country in terms of they're entirely part of the capitalist class and all that sort of stuff, you know. So the notion that you need to be deferential and respectful to them is absolutely 100% embedded into society in this country. So any dissent from that is going to draw criticism. So it's just the way I'm actually, you know, that way where I'm just like kind of shrugging my shoulders and I'm just kind of waiting for it all to die down now.
Yeah.
Well, the reason it becomes so comical is because it's framed as a debate, you know, the way they're referencing it now on the, was that guy who did the rant in the news today.
That was weird, man.
That it's like, if you want to debate, you can do it in a more respectful way. But it was always going to be like this because there's a correct opinion, which is why, as you say, Liverpool and Celtic were pre-charged with disrespect.
Yeah.
With what they did.
There's people out there who, you know, in certain parts, certainly the right-wing media, who would talk about, you know, lack of freedom of speech, everything's so woke and politically correct. You know, what they mean is that political correctness and lack of free speech is in reference to things that they want to speak freely about, because these are the same people who are, you know, vociferously condemning any criticism of the events that have happened. But I will be honest, I'm bored talking about it now.
We'll move on quickly. But Lynn, has he got anything else to say on it?
No, I think it's, as you say, it's why the banner was, you know, a Michael Fagan reference and not some paragraph about why the Royals don't suit the country. You know, it's not a debate to be had. It is like it's an over-the-top comical thing now, which is why it was always going to be like this.
You know, I could just see that like a
big shine.
a tifo like from Warsaw to, I don't know, I can try to think of another. Polish city, actually.
Krakow.
Warsaw to Krakow, explaining in great detail and succinctly. Not succinctly, actually, because it's a big banner. The views on the monarchy amongst the Celtic support.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, though, it would have been hilarious if yesterday had been a home game it would get hot. But yeah, I thought, you know, yesterday at watching the game, the support were phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Celtic's away support cannot be undermined, but they can't be kind of under when someone's not given as rated as highly.
Underestimated.
I don't know.
That'll do.
Pure class, pure heavy class. But the singing was great. One criticism. Can you all get together, can the Green Brigade and all the away fans and the people who go to the games, and just have a meeting, maybe a Zoom call? We need to sort out the Merry Ploughboy bit off to Dublin, because there was people saying Queen, there was people saying King. Let's get together and sort it out. That's the only criticism I'll have. But the atmosphere in the stadium was really weird, because, you know, you've got Celtic, you've got our support singing for the whole time. You've got kind of sections of Shakhtar fans / Ukrainian fans who were occasionally getting up for it. The rest of it were kind of just, they were probably backing Shakhtar, but they were more like neutrals than anything, watch the game. So it was a really, really bizarre situation overall.
Through the TV coverage, not all of us are fortunate enough to be able to jet off to Champions League away games. It seemed like a you know, it was a home a home game for us.
Yeah.
Because the crowd was sparse, and obviously there's reasons for that. Obviously it's in Warsaw, and I mean, Shakhtar haven't played in Donetsk since, was it about 8 years or something now?
Yeah.
Since so even when they were, after they played the league games, I think it's, is it Lviv? I think they might play them. They were playing them in Kiev.
They were in Kiev, yeah. I think this. Or maybe it is Lviv, yeah.
It might be. I'm not, basically they're kind of, you know, displaced for their league action, and then they're further displaced for their European games. So as much as there's, you know, there's a lot of Ukrainian refugees in Poland, they're not necessarily going to be Shakhtar fans. It might be that there's just Ukrainian refugees who are going to support or, you know, watch a Ukrainian team. But you could definitely, you know, we benefited from that in terms of the fact that it was an away game, but it wasn't quite an away game, if you know what I mean.
We also just, we booed our touches, and, you know, we treated it just with the respect of it being a competition. And that's why I liked it. I loved it. Lorenzo Pichetti, it finished one each. Mm-hmm. What's your kind of general thoughts on the game? Because there was a lot of kind of debate and discussion online yesterday, and I think lots of people took it lots of different ways. There was some positivity coming out of it. There was some negativity coming out of it. What was your thoughts?
It's both. I mean, there's never room for nuance when you're talking about Celtic, but I thought they played very well. But the overwhelming feeling when the final whistle blew was disappointment. You know, I couldn't help but be disappointed the rest of the night. But watching the game, I thought we were playing really good football. I thought we dominated, you know, an away Champions League game for large parts of the game, the majority of the game. So overall, in, you know, the morning after, I think my disappointment at the 3 points going away from us is still kind of backed by positivity in how the team played, where we are, the fact we have, like, we're allowed to be disappointed at this.
Yes.
You know, we've got a point away from home in the Champions League. And some of the debate on Twitter in particular, I mean, I know it's just people shouting into the void, but some of the reactions to certain players and the result in general was way over the top for me.
Yeah, there was some takes that I thought were wild, is the phrase I'm going to use. But Samani, I think Lorenzo kind of sums up pretty well, like, played well. Well, this is my interpretation. I'd like to hear yours. Played well, played exceptionally well in patches, played poorly in small patches. Overall, a good performance, but a little bit frustrated at the end.
Yeah, I mean, the cold fact of the result is we left 2 points on the table.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be fair to this current Celtic team and the manager not to acknowledge where we are and where we've came from in terms of, we were starting Champions League qualifiers last season with Dane Murray, who hasn't been anywhere near the first team again. No, that sounded like I'm criticising Dane Murray, but I'm not. And what I'm saying is we had a raw, untested youth player starting away to AZ Alkmaar last season. Excuse me. And, you know, little more than a year later, we are raging that we only took a point away in an away game in the Champions League. So when you frame it in the bigger picture and the journey or whatever, if you want to call it, it's quite remarkable how far we've came in such a short period of time. But when you look at the game in and of itself and how it transpired, and I'm sure we'll come and talk about them, the gilt-edged chances that we missed, then, you know, it doesn't matter. That other stuff fades away a wee bit, and you just need to comment on the game as itself and basically say, We passed up a real opportunity here.
Yeah, I think that's kind of summed up pretty well. Hak Sabanovic was in the starting lineup. I think we all predicted the lineup, with the exception of Hak Sabanovic being in it. You know, I think we'd all been talking about Maeda or Abada, and then all of a sudden there's like a sort of Ange Springs a surprise. How surprised were you, Lorenzo? And also, what did you make of Hak Sabanovic?
Super surprised. I mean, we've been having the Maeda Abada debate now because the two of them are on form generally. The two of them are really good options. Hak Sabanovic is a guy who's come on, we've been excited about seeing him, but I don't think I thought he would get thrown into that game. I thought he looked great again. I think particularly the start of the game, I'm talking about his assist, I just thought he looks a really quality player. But the reason he got pulled off at half time is he doesn't look quite fit. But everything else about him, I think he looks a really exciting addition, just the way he disguises things, the way he goes at players. I think he makes a lot of really good decisions.
He's very, very direct. Yeah. I found him to be really direct. I think, obviously, him and Jota, I was watching notes in that they switched about three times before, like literally within the first 5 minutes before we scored the goal in 10th or 11th minute. But they switched at least three times. And, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to ask Ange a question, but I was wondering if that was specifically done from a tactical point of view or whether that was just them just try to find their feet. Does Ange tell them to do that, or do they, of their own accord, say, actually, let's switch and see who's got the best run of this at fullback? What did you make of Haksabanovic?
Similar to Lorenzo, he's a guy, when I seen him in the starting lineup, I was pleasantly surprised because of the small cameos he's had. He's looked direct, you know, facing players up, which always excites football fans. Fundamentally, though, he was good. And then faded quite badly. I mean, you could see, I think he was the first of the side who began to look visibly tired. So it seems as if he's a fair bit away from where we would want him to be. I hope that's not full fitness. But you would hope, you know, that, you know, when he builds up to it, he's a guy who looks as if he's going to excite. And last night, you know, the wee pass that he played for Hitati for the goal, you can see that level of quality. But very quickly after that, you were starting to think, this is a bit too intense for you just now. But you can't criticise him for that last night on the basis of what he delivered in the small time that he was, you know, not blown out his arse. but you're then hopeful that he's going to build in that going forward. And you've got to say that on the small sample that we've got of the guy, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that if he, you know, nailed down one of those starting positions, you know, choice, one of our first choice front three, I think, and again, you know, quote me back in 6 months, I might look like an arsehole for saying that, but, you know, just sometimes you just get a feel, and he seems like the sort of guy who I think could end up, you know, cementing a place in that front three.
He doesn't look like a guy who wants to sit on the bench. Like, sometimes there are players who, you know, Maïda is a guy who I think is, I think every footballer wants to play, but there are certain players who are just, will do what they need to do for the team. And I'm not saying Haksabanovic isn't a team player, but he just looks like one of those guys who's like, put me in, I want to play. Mm. And that, to me, that's really exciting.
Well, he's got a big crown tattooed in his neck.
That's also that, yeah.
No, I think he seems like, again, the directness of him, he must have been showing Ange something in training. You don't just start a Champions League game out of the blue. You know, he's clearly been champing at the bit. To displace Maïda and Abada for a Champions League game, and that short notice, he's doing something. You know, he's really showing off. And I think, I would imagine the way our recruitment works, he's probably Jota's long-term replacement, by which I mean maybe next summer.
Yeah.
You know, he's meant to be the one that builds up to that.
What did you make of Jota yesterday?
I thought he was way better than people seem to think. I think he had a in and out game, but he's a winger in the Champions League. Oh. And I think, and again, we'll talk about this with almost every player, on a different day they bury their chances. I think if Celtic take even a handful of the chance, or
one
of the chances, then it's a conversation about eights across the board. Nine, everyone was great or whatever. But I thought Jota looked super dangerous. He was a bit unlucky and he got a bit frustrated, but I don't think he was bad.
Chris?
Game of two halves for Jota, I would say. I think in the first half, I think he was noticeably not at it, I would say. And don't get me wrong, in the first half,
But not liability?
No, I mean,
because
the biggest liability the first half in the pitch for us was probably Callum McGregor, and we'll be talking that.
Yeah.
But Jota, for me, again, it was similar to the Real Madrid game. At times, he looks as if he wants to live up to the billing of being the superstar, the big player for us. Oh. And that might have factored into his performance in the first half. I just thought he just looked kind of fairly ineffective. Maybe I'm being a bit unfair. And what you need to remember, for probably half of the first half, we were under the cosh a bit from Shakhtar. But I would agree with Lorenzo. I think in the second half, he looked really dangerous. And I think we've seen, you know, more than a few flashes of what makes him a potentially a really special player. A couple of times, you know, you're thinking, you know, you should have pulled the trigger earlier passed it or whatever. But he did look dangerous. He looked like a guy, if you know, getting on the ball, he could create something for us. I don't think it's you know, the expectations for some of the support is that he's going to hit the ground running and, you know, be a superstar for us in the Champions League. And that's maybe a bit unfair because he's still quite young and that might still happen. But we need to see more of the second half from him than the first half performance going forward. And again, I don't think that's not me criticising him. That's me commenting on that single game because, you know, what he's done for us and the trajectory he's on, I think he's going to become that player. You have to, commenting just on that single match, I think that's a fair assessment of him.
I think that he did, you know, I watched the highlights before we started recording, and there was three mazy runs where, if he pulls the trigger earlier, it comes down to decision making maybe, but his ability to beat people, squaring people up and beating them is really, really exceptional. And we're talking, it doesn't matter whether it's Shakhtar or whether it's Real Madrid. This is the highest level of European football away from home. We've not had players who can really take players on and beat them like that, Lorenzo. And let me ask you this, and this is the kind of key question, I think. As a support, are we expecting way too much, way too soon?
No, I think it's what happens when a guy like Ange comes. It's a special time to be a Celtic fan. I think everyone is very excited about Ange.
You can have that, right? Sorry for jumping in, but like you can have that sort of being happy and still expecting us to qualify either second or third. But there are some. I think there's an element of our support that thinks we're the finished article after the Real Madrid performance when we're nowhere near the finished article.
I think that's always been the way at Celtic.
Yeah.
I think you just get people that expect everything to be. And again, you'll talk about players who should have finished chances. You know, the difference between great strikers and world-class strikers is finishing. You know, if you're going to create five chances a game, that's half the battle then finishing them. If you finished all the guilty chances you get, you're Erling Haaland. You know, it's how.
Yeah.
But people talk about it in absolutes where you're either off or you're on it. And Jota, for me, I think, like you say, Jota likes to put a team on his back sometimes. And he gets that confidence from knowing he can beat people. And that is a game-changing thing that doesn't happen that often.
Yes.
So when he feels that confidence flowing, I think I'm happy with Jota running at a right-back in the Champions League 10 times a game and beating them three. That, for me, is Jota's job. You know, he's to go and knock on the door because he will beat them. And the time you completely outclass and beat a right-back, there's a decision to be made, which, again, he didn't do right a lot of the time, but there's a ball to be played or a finish to be made, which... Yeah. Changes a game. And I think for me, a winger who's going to change a game is the kind of guy who has to have the confidence that he will take on a right back 10 times and the one time he beats him is the time he scores.
Absolutely. Chris, come in.
Going back to your point, do we expect too much too quickly? Yes. But that's a big club mentality and it shouldn't change. I talked about this a few years ago, you know. The minute you lower your expectations as a support, I think the level to which the club can go to lowers from that. I don't mind that. I mean, is it unreasonable? I mean, some of the reactions that you get from some supporters, is it unreasonable in terms of where we've came from and stuff? Of course it is, but I don't have a problem with that. You know, in fact, I find that I'm a wee bit wary of folk that go, oh, well, wait a minute, you need to, you know, look at it from this perspective, look at it from that perspective. We're a passionate support. We've got a mentality, a big club mentality, because we are a big club hampered by, you know, the league that we play in. I've got no problem with that. You can take a step back and analyse it, when I spoke about it a bit earlier on, about the bigger picture, you know. You're going to react emotionally to the game. That's just the way it is as a Celtic supporter. And, you know, we'll do this because we're on a podcast and we're talking about it and we'll maybe break things down, you know. Supporters will do that talking to each other as well, you know. You see the front-facing stuff on social media, like Twitter, you know, and people obviously react to that. And, you know, some people will quite simply be, you know, as you're talking about, you know, expecting, as you said, the finished article and just assume that. But generally speaking, I don't think that's the case, but I don't have a problem with it either. And, you know, I don't want to be snobby about it to say, I can't believe you're thinking that. You know, that's the way we are as a support, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, on like objective football, game by game, we missed five or six sitters last night. You cannot end that game as a football fan and not be
disappointed.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why the criticism's there, because this is the most basic thing you're looking for in football is goals. So we can be coming along to the finished article everywhere else, but if we're still going into Europe and still missing big chances,
yeah,
you're hitting the ceiling because you're missing the bit that gets you the points. You know, it doesn't matter how well we play. Somebody has every right. People who reacted really badly last night, we can, I guess, say, take a step back. But when you miss that many chances in a Champions League game, no matter who you're playing, everybody can step back and go, that was a waste of an opportunity. That was 3 points gone.
And on that as well, not to single him out, but I'm going to single him out just for to use as a point. Giakoumakis, I think, had the most gilt-edged chance of the lot with the time and the space that he had in the box, right? And he missed, and he should have scored, right? That's the bottom line. And at the time that he scored, on the basis of how threatening they'd been, you've got to assume that we would have won that game. Now, some people will be critical of Giakoumakis, but we're not. I don't think the support are critical to the point where we're, you know, hanging the guy out to dry or anything like that.
No.
You know, I'm saying that to him. He should have buried that. No excuses. Absolutely no excuses. He should have buried that chance. But I'm now not saying that you cast him aside. He's no any use. It doesn't matter if he can do it against Ross County. He's not a Champions League, you know, level quality striker or whatever.
Just take the next one, son.
Yeah.
Just take the next one.
You know,
because he will get chances.
I mean, and don't get me wrong. Again, with a bigger sample. I hate using that phrase, bigger sample. See, with all the other games that we play, you know, see if that's a consistent pattern, then you can probably take it. But I don't think the support are doing that just now. But quite simply, I don't think it's unfair to say, you should have buried that.
What about my Edis chance? It's a little bit different. I think it's a little bit...
For me, it's nowhere near as straightforward as Giakoumakis. Giakoumakis is, it doesn't matter if it's Kellyn Sheridan playing for us in Champions League. It's a straightforward striker hitting a ball from...
Yeah.
If you're making a living in football as a striker...
Aye.
That really does sound like I'm being quite harsh on him there. Maeda as well. I don't think it's as easy, but he should score as well.
Yeah.
He should score as well. I mean, it's not... I mean, you forgive either one of them if the other one scores. So when you get two chances that are as stark and glaring as that, and you don't put one of them away, you know, the old cliche, you dig it out, you've got to take your chances at this level. Don't know why I put that accent on, but...
He loves that for some reason.
I love that accent, but you know, that's the bottom line, you know. I mean, you could argue over what one was easier or not, you know. For me, both of them should have scored. And if one of them had and the other one hadn't, it would have been a lot easier to forgive.
We did a lot right yesterday. I mean, we are being maybe a little bit critical in regards to the opportunities that we missed, but Celtic were in control. I'd say there was a period in the second half, in the first half, maybe 10 minutes where we just didn't have control of the game and we weren't pressing particularly well. But then we finished the second half strong, and then in the first half strong, and then the second half, I think we were in control for the whole game. Yep. It's a Champions League away a game. You know, it's... You know, we can talk about the idea of, you know, the games in isolation, and that's fine. But this is a big occasion, and you know, under O'Neill, we could barely string a performance together, let alone the Juventus game was the only real performance in that group, for example, where we played well. We were stuffed in the other two. You know, every time we went away under O'Neill, I didn't expect us to get anything. And we came close a couple of times. Same with Rodgers, same with Lennon, same with Strachan. You know, obviously we've had, you know, Lennon got that win in Spartak and, you know, Rodgers got the win in Anderlecht and stuff. But we never really controlled a second half the way we controlled this half. There's a lot to look into and think, a lot to build on here.
I think the performance was generally great. I think, again, you score one goal and we're looking at this thinking, really,
that's the frustration,
really
just that one fucking goal.
Well, you're referencing, like, you know, beating Juventus, like Chris Sutton scores an incredible volley, Giakoumakis missed a sitter.
Yeah.
You know, these are the differences that make these results happen. I think, in general, we played really well. I don't think we can look at this and think we're not... I mean, nobody, I think, no Celtic fan looks at that now and thinks we're not cut out for Champions League football. Yeah, it's just frustrating that we didn't take our chance. And even against Real Madrid, there's a couple of chances we should have taken. And it's just, it's frustrating, but it's, you would hope, you know, we talked last season, the stats guys, people don't like to hear it, but the XG level that self out come the end of the season. You just don't have that time in the Champions League, so you can't, and we're not beating teams 5-0 and then 1-0 and 2-0. We need to win every game. We need to get 3 points on the board.
Yeah.
And the way Shakhtar dismantled Leipzig last week meant 3 points yesterday would have been massive. I actually think Leipzig will beat Shakhtar the next time they play them.
I don't think Shakhtar will pick up another point.
No, I think it's about to become a wee bit complicated, but at the same time, I think two home wins.
If we win our two home, we could potentially qualify by winning our two home games if Real Madrid win their next three games.
Yeah. The groups,
It's open, it's wide.
It's wide at the moment, and then there's an assumption now that Tedesco's gone and they've brought Marco Rose in, that Leipzig are going to be
world beaters.
A far stronger outfit, and you know, some of the, you know, the stats for last night, I know Madrid ended up winning 2-0, but you know, until late in the game they hadn't had a shot on target. But see some of the points that we made last week about how they approached us, they're equally applicable to this week as well. These are running a mill games for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You know, match day one, Alan last week said, you know, Karim Benzema is not going to run the legs off our centre halves because he's Karim Benzema and he's won the Champions League however many times, and this is match day one. That's the same there, you know. To an extent, they'll probably go through the motions, and though some of the stats would probably point to the fact that Leipzig had a stronger game, I don't know if you can read too much into that. Much the same as with Shakhtar as well yesterday. I'm not sure if they are a lot poorer than that first result showed, or we just ran the legs off them and they couldn't cope with us. You know, there's still a bit of unknown about that.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought we were really excellent last night, but I've not seen enough of Shakhtar apart from that first game to know if that was a stunning performance against a really good side, or if we've got a fella running the mill side and, you know, it's an opportunity that we've lost. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah,
it's,
I do, yeah.
It's strange. The game's open, but I'm still not 100% sure in where we are in terms of that. If you told me we beat Leipzig home and away, you know, I could believe that. And then the reverse would be the same. If we lost both of those games, you know, I wouldn't be 100% shocked either. It's just a strange one just now.
Yeah, it really is. Lorenzo, their left-hand side's pretty fucking good, eh?
What's the name of that boy who scored?
Mudrick.
Yeah.
So I've read all the hype at him before the game. I hadn't seen him play.
No.
The way he burnt, like, Juranovic is a quick player.
Very quick.
And we're supposed to believe, you know, Ryan Kent's like the fastest, as fast as it gets in Scotland, and he has never beat Juranovic to a ball in these games.
This is, Arsenal have been trying to sign, have been interested in a couple of their players, I believe.
He made Juranovic look like Majstorovic for that run. He is one of the fastest players I've seen in ages.
Yeah.
And the finish,
Joe Hart maybe do better.
The face does not want to get hit with a ball.
It's one of those ones where, see, if you're getting to the point where you're arguing whether a ball struck at that ferocity, Joe Hart should have put his face in front of it. You know, from an absolute point of view, I would be saying, yes, Joe, don't move your head. But the problem
human being inside of you.
Well, you might also be, he's maybe anticipating, I'm going to cross his body. His body's already thinking about going down.
It's further back in the pitch where the problem stemmed from, fundamentally. You know, I mean, if you're in this position where you could end up saying, how do you know save that for just about anything, you know? I mean, don't get me wrong. See, when you look at it, the angle from behind the goal, you know, looked, you thought he could do it. There's one where it looks as if he kind of ducks out the way of it, and you see it. And I remember seeing that and thinking, I don't know. But
Joe Hart isn't the issue.
No, it's not. And it's, well, it's Callum.
Yeah, Callum McGregor, I think he was just quite erratic in the first half. What do you make of him?
Well, I thought we played great last night, but one of the things I kept getting frustrated about in that game, we were diving into a lot of challenges, which is not something I really associate a team with. You know, Jens get booked for just a really daft,
rash challenge
for no reason, and then obviously the goal comes because Callum McGregor just attacks a ball that he wouldn't usually attack.
His anticipation for that was weird.
It's like he breaks from the system to think, I'm going to be aggressive and get this. And Juranovic is guilty of that sometimes as well. You know, he'll make these kind of, he made a tackle in the Real Madrid game really early on against Vinicius where he just thought, I'm going to get the crowd on my side. I can see the ball, I'm going to win it, instead of staying disciplined. And they get a really dangerous free kick from it. This is not like emblematic of the Celtic team, which is why it being a character and breaking the system is why the breakdown happens so fast and one ball was it. That was the game.
Well, I mean, that's the thing though. Like, you can, you know, you hear words like, you know, press and all that stuff, and you know, a lot of people are not interested in kind of that sort of you know, discussion and stuff. But the whole point of the press is to keep the ball up there so we can win it back quicker.
It's discipline,
right?
More than aggression.
But you can. There was three times at least yesterday where one pass they'd broken our press and we were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I think that's the whole high risk, high reward thing. and we just have to kind of roll with that, Chris. But it's, you know, it's McGregor maybe one of his poorest performances in quite a while.
See,
not necessarily fully in the second half, but just there's a period in the first half where he didn't really have a lot of control.
Well, I mean, Alan's not here, and he's talked about McGregor in the six and being better one forward, and he actually talked about, you know, at Champions League level, you know, would you be better if he was playing foot one forward from that as opposed to the six, because he said that there's some weaknesses to his game. Now, he's not here, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just quoting what he said to kind of hang him out to dry. And I don't think that's fair in McGregor, because he's such a good player for us.
Oh, no, I'm not, yeah, of course, yeah.
And I know we're not saying that, you know. The mistake, there was also another one where he kind of played a blind pass across, and I think Shved nearly came in and took it in the first half as well. So, I mean, there might be, it was a poor mistake, you know, and it caused the goal. And as you said, Juranovic up against Mudrick from a standing start, you know, he's blistering fast and he's done that. It's one of these things that happens, you know, and what makes it a wee bit more annoying is because you're talking about how teams can break our press, you know, as long as they're really concise, and that's the high risk, high reward stuff, but avoidable. And that's what's a wee bit more annoying about it. But yet again, Cal McGregor's not a guy who you're going to hang out to dry for that. You're going to go, that was a mistake. You've been phenomenal for us, you know, across a number of games and stuff like that. He'll know that himself. And then, going forward, he's, you know, it's going to be fine.
But then you look at the fact that we've got Abelgaard on the bench, and then, you know, we go to Germany, and there's a couple, two games, or is there two games before Germany? Because McGregor in the eight role is a different gravy, I think.
See, I mean, the benefit of Abelgaard potentially, right, because he might be garbage, right? I'm assuming he isn't going to keep, but not only the benefit is then you've got an option to move McGregor forward, you've also then got somebody like O'Reilly or Hitati coming on at the time when they're normally the players that are coming off because they're tired. And that's
different.
The drop-off. Now, Turnbull, again, I'm not going to focus too much on Turnbull, but Moy's starting to surprise people about his abilities and how he is able to do it. Turnbull, I still think people are saying, I mean, my personal opinion is he's quite one-footed in terms of, you know, playing at this sort of level. So there's that slight drop-off that you've maybe got in terms of quality around the 65 minute mark when you're bringing people on. With Abelgaard, you've then got the option to bring on guys who are starting for us just now, whether that be Hitati, more likely O'Reilly, I would say, which keeps the midfield fresher for longer, and we know how important that midfield three is for us. So getting him up to speed, I think, is huge. I'm desperate to see what he's capable of and what he would add because of the dimensions and options it would put out there for us.
You know, I asked Ange a question in regard to the six, and, you know, he talked about what's required and stuff, but he just kept mentioning Moy. He kept mentioning, you know, how important he is, and, you know, he's played there before. So, and I don't think any of us thought that Moy would... He's been involved in both Champions League games.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone expected that. Are you surprised, Lorenzo?
Yeah, I've just even seen him come on. I think, as you said, that does feel like I like Turnbull a lot, I like Moy a lot, but I don't know, there's an instinctive thing when you see players like Hitati and O'Reilly are going to be replaced by just not like for like, not what you've expected or the same kind of players.
Not necessarily like for like in terms of quality, and that's no disregard. That's no disrespect to Moy or Turnbull. What that is saying is how good and how high, well, me anyway, how highly I rate. I mean, Hitati yesterday was exceptional. Some his movements is turning with the ball, his movement off the ball, like. They are Champions League quality players, and I'm not saying that Turnbull and Moy aren't or can't be, but there is a, to back your point up, there's a little bit of a drop off.
Well, I mean, Moy came on, played a couple of brilliant passes, which resulted in chances. Turnbull and him created a chance at the edge of the box for Turnbull, and if there's somebody you want at the edge of the box with a shot, Turnbull's up there, and he was on his good foot and everything, he just didn't quite catch it. But I think with Abelgaard, we're just unlucky with the condensed nature of the Champions League this season because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
It just means, you know, he gets signed and then it's Real Madrid like days later. You know, there's no opportunity to kind of get these guys in.
See, just quickly on Moy, I must admit as well, I was surprised at, you know, that he's appeared in the park in the Champions League games. Even more surprised with his most recent performances. just how intelligent a footballer he is, because we've all been here, we've talked, you know, at length on podcasts, not just us, other contributors on other podcasts about Ange's system and how you need to run and do this, that, or the next thing. Moyes seems to have a role where he comes on around that 60-minute mark and he's able to steady the ship a wee bit. He, to me, is what I thought McCarthy could have been.
Yeah.
But McCarthy, quite clearly, fitness level-wise, you know, he's not where he once was as a player. But I think when Moy came in, there was a lot of people that said, well, you've just signed another James McCarthy.
No.
And again, small sample size. But for me, he looks as if he's a guy who could be really, really important once we've done that manic bit at the start, as being a steadying influence in helping to see games out.
A couple of comments from Twitter. Ken Walsh, the three subs together in the Champions League, in my opinion, not good enough. Slows the game down. Kyogo and Hatate were doing okay. Paul Curran says, another good performance, but lacked cutting edge. Do we need to change anything to make that final step to win in the Champions League, or could it be that we just need a little bit of luck? I genuinely think it's just a little bit of luck. Just keep doing what you're doing. I don't necessarily think there's a lot more we can change. I don't think, other than personnel.
Play a badder earlier. For me. But again, as you say, they're all professional footballers who are good at putting the ball in the back of the net. They just,
would you have started the batter yesterday?
Yeah. I'd start a batter every week. I like a batter.
Chris, you just, not necessarily on the batter point, just the point on, you know, is it luck or do we need to change?
Part of it might be mentality. We've got an embedded winning mentality domestically, very clearly. That took time to build up, though. And we're now in the Champions League. We've played two games. We've equipped ourselves well, performance-wise. But see these chances that we're missing? They're glaring. And we're rightly critical of some of them. But part of that just could be the manager having to reinforce with them in training. You know, just do what you do here. You know, you're capable. That is your level. You know, you're feeling your way into it. You know, Maida, I don't know, putting an arm around him, or Giakoumakis, and saying, look, their chances you bury, like, you know, it might be the Champions League, but you're capable, that you're a player who can perform there, you know. Maybe he won't do this. This is what I would do. It's probably why I'm not the select manager, but it might very well just be that confidence thing or that, because, you know, it's not unreasonable to assume that they missed those chances because of the heightened tension of the, you know, the stakes that are there, you know, and it might be that, you know, as you feel yourself into more European games, that you become more relaxed and you just do what you would naturally do. So the immediate thing to jump to is change personnel. Shouldn't have been Giakoumakis, should have been Abada, you know, or why are you bringing Maida on? It might just be that with time and a wee bit more experience at this level, it will come.
A lot of these finishes, I thought, were overthinking. Like you say, like Matt O'Reilly even had he had created a good shot, he put it on target, and it seemed like it was a good effort. It was dead safe. It was dead kind of roll towards keeper.
Yeah, it was very much a case of, I'm going to take a shot and I want to make sure it gets on target. I'm not criticising Matt O'Reilly because he made the keeper make a save, but yeah, I kind of feel like he could have put his foot through it a little bit more.
Do you know what was a wee bit frustrating as well, is that keeper looked there for the taking, man. So
kept pushing the ball. He's clearly a Baniac because he kept putting the ball back into the.
Well, it's Baniac. I like that. But that's exactly it. That I wouldn't disagree. That shot probably was fairly safe. But see, if you're taking shots like that you're getting them on target, he looked like the sort of guy that would be spilling them.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're thinking, you're hoping somebody's going to be sharp and come in on them. But
even the Giakoumakis chance, he really like gets his head over it and does all the motions instead of kicking the ball in the back. Like, the thing we like about Giakoumakis is his first instinct is, what's the quickest way to put the ball in the net?
Yeah.
He's taking 10 seconds for it.
See if he had less time. I mean,
classic.
You know,
toe poked it.
You know, see if. Did he have too much time? We're getting all the cliches. I love a cliche. He had too much time to think about it. But it's a lot of Giakoumakis' goals have been that instinct, you know, and if it maybe just felt way when he took it, you know, but anyway.
I've got an interesting stat for you. Maurice Gents completed 109 passes. Out of 114 attempted, which is the most on record for a Celtic player in a Champions League match 2003-2004 onwards. What did you make of the centre-halves before we kind of move on? And well, what did you make of how did you think we set up Lorenzo, like in terms of how did you feel we were troubled?
No, I think apart from the goal and then the momentum after the goal slightly, but again, it's the way we play, there will be times where we rely on recovery pace or You know, just blocks in the box, which Carter Vickers and Jens are great at. You know, you don't fear balls in the box too much. The time we got burnt for the goal was because nobody could keep up with Mudrick recovery pace-wise when the ball breaks down. I thought centre-backs were good. I'm really surprised at how comfortable Jens looks for a guy that's kind of coming on loan, a little bit out of favour, a lot to prove, jumped in, taking his chance. He just looks really assured and comfortable and happy to, again, like we talked about, the players that have really bought into Ange as a centre-half, when you talk about that number of passes, he's happy to play the game he's told to, and he's really kind of lent into it. I'm really no fear about the two of them playing anything in the Champions League right now, which is saying something compared to how we were thinking about, you know, what would be like defence. Even when Ange first comes in, we did a podcast here, maybe like the first one after COVID even, I can't remember, that was like, if we're in the Champions League, do you fear about the way Ange plays? The way I feel about these centre-halves, I've got no worries about being gung-ho, or because their best strength for me, particularly Carter Vickers, is that last ditch. If a ball comes in the box, he gets it.
Yeah. You know? Jens gave the ball away yesterday in the second half, and as soon as he gave the ball away, he realised he made a mistake and he recovered it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's a small thing, but I was just like, he realised he made a mistake, and from there he got confidence. And that's what we're talking about. Little things happening in games that just gives confidence. A centre-half having confidence in the Champions League is probably tougher than a defender having confidence, a striker having confidence in the Champions League at our level, just because obviously the difference in terms of quality. But Chris, any kind of final thoughts on the game overall?
Just, you know, it is that disappointment. You do have to caveat it with, I'm disappointed with a Champions League away point, something that's very rare for us as a club. And this, where we've came to in the space of a year, is phenomenal. And yet still, you're just thinking, what could have been if we had taken one of those chances? But I think overall, being on a positive note about us in the Champions League so far, is my expectations a couple of weeks ago, talking in this podcast, was to ensure that we didn't get embarrassed in the Champions League. Talking about Rodgers going away to Barcelona, getting, you know, tushed 7-0, and I know we've still got to go to Madrid, so I'm not counting my chickens yet. But, you know, we've not only avoided that, so far we've looked like a team who belong at this level, and that's the bigger picture for me. That's what I take away from it. The fact that I'm disappointed and we're disappointed with just a point in Shakhtar just shows the strides we've taken.
Lorenzo, yourself?
Yeah, same. People, every right to be frustrated. I was frustrated when the whistle blew, but we played really good away from home, the Champions League, and where we've come from, it's the luxury of being able to be disappointed with that game and not breathing a sigh of relief that we got out of there with one each.
That's a very good way of putting it. Very good way.
Yeah, I think that is, because we've had one each draws in the Champions League and it's been backs to the wall stuff. You know, I much prefer good toe-to-toe as opposed to let's try and snatch something here.
We've went to Shakhtar twice, and I know obviously that it was in Poland, but we've went away to Shakhtar Donetsk twice and we've been absolutely scudded. We're now at a level where we're disappointed with a draw. I think that says all it needs to about where we are. Just final point. I was at the post-match presser, and the tension in the room was palpable in regards to how Ange was. I think he was, again, frustrated, again, upset, but spoke very well. Did not in any way throw his players under the bus in any way. But you can tell he's kind of like a bit annoyed. And I like that. Again, yeah, coming away and not making a statement about how we can't compete at this level and all that. He's clear about that. And yeah, love it. We're just going to go now to Stats Corner. Stats and Tactics Corner.
Hello and welcome to the Stats and Tactics Corner. It will be a brief one since we're less than 24 hours since Shakhtar and Celtic kickoff yesterday. I've only been able to watch back and try to analyse most of the first half so far. But I will be on the Lunch Club with Paul and Ian tomorrow, where we'll talk a little bit more. And then on the Review podcast next week, we'll have a full breakdown of the Shakhtar game. And if there's something particularly interesting in the game versus St Mirren, we'll discuss that as well. But some brief numbers and thoughts on yesterday. Let's start with expected goals, of course, XG. With the Champions League games, we can actually get six different XG scores. And to be honest, they're all pretty even, ranging from 0.2 to 0.5 for Shakhtar and 1.3 to 2 XG for Celtic. Our main provider, Instat, had it at 0.3 to Shakhtar and 1.9 to Celtic. So a dominating Celtic performance, but also one with a total amount of XG and shots. Instat has Celtic on 17 shots to 5. Maybe mask a little bit that Celtic had lots of good chances, maybe rather than one or two huge chances that are simply more likely to be scored. For example, Celtic's five biggest chances, according to Instat, which were Desmiera's two attempts, Jota's second blocked shot in the second half, Kyogo's early finish, and then Gigi's shot wide. They were all between 0.29 and 0.19 XG. So five attempts that you, on average, would expect to be scored around every fourth and fifth time. And this time, spoiler, none of them were scored. There was some discussion also on whether Joe Hart should have done better on the goal. Purely in number terms, StatsBomb has a post-shot XG, which basically measures the probability of a goal being scored based on the actual shot taken, not just the location, but basically the actual shot taken, the trajectory and the speed of it. StatsBomb have that as 0.17 post-shot XG. Translated, that means that such a shot from that position is on average scored around 1 in 5 times, or saved 4 in 5 times. But possession-wise, territory-wise, Celtic were dominant. They had 55% possession, 130 more passes. They got into Shakhtar's final third in control of the ball 45 times compared to Shakhtar's 21, and into the penalty box in control of the ball 19 times compared to 9. As I said, a fuller tactical analysis of the game over the next few days in pods, but I do think a lot of that analysis will concentrate on what happens from about the 15th minute of the game to a few minutes after Shakhtar score. Mainly because of two things. Some of Celtic's defensive pressing choices, I think, led to both the equaliser and the disallowed Shakhtar goal. And that is within a game I thought Celtic was actually set up quite well in terms of the pressing in the front press. I think on this level, if you do, as we've seen before, if you do smaller mistakes in Europe, they get punished a lot harder. And the second point, I think, again, we see a tendency from Celtic, like we did in especially the Cup semi-final last season, that the centre-backs become too safe on the ball in certain periods. They start going back to Joe Hart from quite far off the pitch, which yesterday let Shakhtar get high up the pitch and then contributes to Celtic not being able to keep the ball in the team in a period where it's really desperately needed. So essentially, I think that period after 15 minutes was pretty poor game management from Celtic players overall. But more analysis, more on that on all the Cynic podcast coming up soon.
Thanks to Christian for the analysis, looking back at the Shakhtar game. That's the sort of analysis we have on a regular basis. There's a podcast on a Tuesday called The Review, in which Christian and Graham will break down the games at the weekend in quite the fantastic detail. Also, we put on the free feed the stories and the songs, Famine, Rebellion and Football, which is part of a series of podcasts we've done, the stories and the songs series. If you want to get the second part, if you want to kind of listen to all the other ones, sign up at The Cynic, thecynic.co. They're all there for you. We'll be putting out bits to give you a taster of what we're producing on a daily basis, daily podcasts every single week. On that, Lorenzo is part of the Celtic Women's Football Show. There wasn't a podcast this week due to the fact that the games were postponed. It was supposed to be myself and Claire. But it'll be back next week, Lorenzo. Celtic Women are playing Hamilton at the Excelsior Stadium at 3 p.m. on Sunday. Forward to that.
Yeah, it's always nice when a game lines up with both teams. You can see both teams. It's kind of what it should be.
Yeah,
and it's the ideal when you want to watch Celtic twice and hopefully Celtic win twice. It doesn't really get much better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. It does say 3 p.m. on the website, but card subject to change, time subject to change, because it changes and fluctuates. But Celtic women are playing Hamilton at the Excelsior Stadium on Sunday. As I say, keep up to date on the website with the time. If you follow Cynic Women on Twitter, Claire gives all the details when she has them, so look out for that. St Mirren, Mr. Sirmani, St Mirren, Celtic go to St Mirren Park on Sunday. We've talked obviously about the Shakhtar game. We've talked about frustration. Will we take our frustration out in St Mirren?
I think when it comes to any domestic game just now, I think we're capable of blowing anybody away. You know, there's games that you go in and you think they're potentially tricky, or that's a banana skin, and there will be points to be dropped this season, you know. And it could come at any time, just because it, you know, that's just the nature of it. You know, there's games that you think that you're going to win and you win easily and you don't. But right now, before every single domestic game, I'm thinking that we're just going to go in there and absolutely smash them. And Sunday's no exception. I'm really looking forward to seeing us again. That's not just domestically, that's in the Champions League. Right now, I just love watching Celtic. So I don't even know if we'll take our frustrations out on them. I think we'll just get back to business, to be perfectly honest. Where, you know, the opposition domestically just now, there's not a team out there who won't fear playing us just now, and rightly so.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Lorenzo, how are you feeling coming into this game? What are you thinking in regards to sort of lineup?
Just excited to watch it again. Like you said, it's just like when we're playing a domestic game right now, it's you tune in for entertainment more than you do as like a Celtic fan. You're there to see it 5-6-0. I don't even know if the bookies would give you 2-1 on like a 3-goal handicap for Celtic anymore in a domestic game. I want to see Haksabanovic. I want to see him get fitter, obviously, and I think if we're going to win by 2 or 3 goals or more, I think Haksabanovic will hopefully run riot at the weekend. I'd like to see Abelgaard just play football.
Yes.
And you'd imagine this is quite a easy shift for him, so maybe we'll just get used to playing with these players. But I don't think we'll change too much. I think we're on this run of games. You've got the international break and this kind of thing. I think Ange is quite happy to not change much and keep these players. You don't want to overlook the domestic games, but you want to keep
everyone ticking along.
Yeah, you're treating them as a primer for the cup finals, to use another cliche, which are the Champions League games.
I mean, we don't have a game after this till the 1st of October. So there is time. Obviously, there's international break, so a lot of these players will be going to international duty, which, you know, carries with it its own risks. But would you be looking for a lot of wholesale changes yourself? You know, Lorenzo says maybe one or two. What about yourself, Chris? You guys like Anthony Ralston, who people are kind of scrambling for to come back in. It's very unlikely he's going to change the centre-halves. He's made that clear. Very unlikely he's going to change the goalkeeper. Greg Taylor's probably your only viable left-back at this point. Thoughts?
I mean, we've got options to change it up. What he's going to do, I wouldn't guess, because any time I've made a prediction, it's not came true. But, you know, the likes of Anthony Ralston coming in for this game, wouldn't have a problem with it. You know, even giving somebody like McGregor a rest and bringing Moy in, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. His old team, of course.
Yeah.
And the options we've got across the front three, nobody's going to care if they started. See, if he started Maeda, Giakoumakis and Abada, you'd still think that's enough to go in there. So I don't know if he's going to do it, but I won't have a problem if he will. And it's going to happen more, I reckon, going forward, just being mindful of the amount of games that we're going to play. So that's the beauty of it just now, in terms of it seems as if we've almost got two players for each position, which is a luxury we never had last season, apart from maybe Bernabe. We're not 100% sure in him just now, but that's the thing. You're now in a position where if some of these guys are out, you don't immediately go, shit. So I don't know if he will, but I'd be happy if he did.
You could base it around the call-ups. I mean, they've got three Japanese internationals for this camp, and they're three guys, as much as are three of our best players, you could swap them out and nobody would bat an eyelid. Giakoumakis in, Maeda out for any of that front four, or those five guys can win that front three. And Hatate out, you know, to get a rest, which is something
to expect. Yeah, I'd actually be quite keen to, you know, we talked about, you know, the substitution, you know, Ken Walsh alluded to it, that with the tweet about, you know, the players coming on, like, so David Turnbull coming on and Moy coming on. I'd be quite keen to see them starting, and hear me out, just to see the effect of bringing Hatate and O'Reilly and McGregor potentially. Maybe not, you'd probably have one of those three playing in the three, but to see what that, if there would be a kind of change of intensity. And I don't want to say that David Turnbull and Moy can't play with intensity, but it would just be interesting to see the kind of flip reverse of what we've been seeing.
I think it would maybe give you redundant info because it's St. Mirren. You know, I think if we're playing anywhere close to our level, I think by the 60-minute mark, we should be two goals up, three goals up. So Hatate coming on is very much that sub like Kyogo was last season. It's why are you making that sub? Why are you even risking? Why are you even nursing these guys? If we put a bench team out and they're 1-2, 3-0, I don't want to see O'Reilly and Hatate touch the pitch. I'd rather see Rocco Vata or some, you know, hammer thrower from the B team come on.
Was that casting aspersions on Rocco himself? I've always thought Rocco was quite a silky player.
He got a name. See, it's the other ones that are...
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is Rocco's modern life, so, you know, you got to treat it with respect.
Oh, a bit of a niche joke, that.
Aye, yeah. Lorenzo did... Wince.
That's not the reaction you want.
It's not. Well, he's Australian, Rocco, from Rocco's Modern Life. He's Australian.
Is he a dog?
He's a didgeridoo. Not a didgeridoo. He's a dingo. Didgeridoo is an instrument, isn't it? See, in regard, you know, we're talking about changes, and, you know, I think there's something about football fans that kind of, we talked about this before, Lorenzo, like, sometimes wholesale changes are just exciting, and you just kind of want to see, you know, you kind of sometimes, the point I'm trying to make is there are certain players that get better when they're not playing. And that's just my fear, that we make too many changes and it fucks up the intensity and flow.
It's like the kind of gamification of sport. People think that the sub who they're excited about is the guy that will change the game, you know, and you can rest. And you could, you know, you look on paper, if we make 11 changes, we're still a better team than St. Mirren. But it's not how football works. You don't just make 11 changes for the sake of it.
Exactly, because it can kind
of. But it's fun, and you get to see all the players you don't see. It's like why people watch preseason games is to see players they don't see. But all preseason games are shit. Well, people still watch
them. They're terrible. They're not. He's not going to make wholesale changes. But see if he made three. You know, see if he put Ralston in for Juranovic. He took out O'Reilly and put in Turnbull and Maeda for Pak Sabanovic or, you know, Jota. That's fine, because what you're doing, you're not disrespecting St Mirren as well to an extent, because as much as I've said I'm confident that we smash anybody just now, you know, we will slip up, and you'll be damned if we make six changes to that side and St Mirren draw nothing each way, you'll get criticism. So I don't think he's going to make that level of wholesale changes for the reasons of continuity, but definitely it's a game where he should be switching up to an extent.
Is there a player, well, probably not, or is there a identity within this team that you don't want to lose by making too many changes? Like, is there players that kind of define what this team is to you? And this is just a very personal question.
I think that there is in the big games, but I do think Ange's cultivated a
squad,
game plan and a squad and a team. I think that's, you know, game plan over personnel with Ange all the time. We've seen a consistent 11 form itself, maybe outside of the front three. But that is the thing that takes away from the team you recognise. But in terms of a domestic game, I don't think there's any player that you take out. You know, the fact that we would even think of Cal McGregor not being that 11 is insane. But at the same time, as we said, you'd happy to see him rested on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I think it's more just the squad is there. The only thing that would maybe make that true would be if one of the new players came in, because they aren't quite part of this embedded squad yet, you know. We don't know what Abelgaard plays like in this team. Does he make... I mean, when Moy first came in, people thought he slowed the game down too much. David Turnbull is a much slower player on the ball than the guys he replaces. It does change the game somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only difference.
Yeah. For yourself, Chris, is there anyone that you'd be keen to play on most games?
In terms of...
Just the identity of the team.
Maybe he's not part of it. I mean, McGregor's going to play most games because of his role as a captain. And... generally speaking, in the midfield, Abelgaard might become one of these guys, but generally speaking, just now we've got the first choice is McGregor, Hatate, and O'Reilly. I would be loath to even take a couple of them out, if you know what I mean, and maintain one of them all the time. Right now, it might be that we get to the fact that Abelgaard's one of them, and then you can mix it up a wee bit more. But that's for the identity of the team. I think that the midfield three is crucial to it. It really is crucial. And right now, I would be kind of loathed if you're taking two of the three out. I think you can definitely accommodate one in certain games, but I'd be a wee bit wary of any more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, see this whole thing about, you know, who can come in and, you know, quality and all that. I just want to see Abelgaard play. I really do. I want to see him play, and I want Haksabanovic to play as well.
It depends how off it is. I mean, I think Ange alluded to the fact that he's got a bit to go. And I mean,
well, he needs to play in one of the next two games if he's going to play in Germany. And if maybe Germany's coming too quick for him.
It might be. That's the thing. We're just desperate for it to happen. And obviously, we signed Haman Haksabanovic from Rubin Kazan, and that comes with problems because of how little football they've then played. So we probably need to be patient, which is difficult for a notoriously impatient support, you know. We're all desperate to see them, but I'd much rather that he's given time to kind of get up to speed and we see the best of him going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So St Mirren versus Celtic, Sunday, 12 PM. Are you looking forward to the minute silence, Lorenzo?
No comment.
Are you looking forward to the minute silence, Chris?
Yeah. I thought we'd already covered that stuff.
It's just a bit of fun at the end. Come on.
Yeah. I'm slightly less self-employed than I used to be, and this is in the free feed.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So, I'm pretty sure we'll be talking about the reaction to the minute silence again.
So, as I say, St Mirren versus Celtic, Sunday, 12 o'clock. We are covering the game in a little bit more detail tomorrow on the Lunch Club. It will be Paul Carlin hosting with Ian Dugan and Christian Wolfe, the original Lunch Club OG. Christian's got some analysis of the St Mirren and how they play. We also spoke to Mark Jardine from the fantastic Part-Time Fan. He's a St Mirren fan, and he is giving us a lowdown on how St Mirren are playing and what we can expect. So Lunch Club will continue to build up to the St Mirren game. Then on Saturday we've got the transfer committee looking over the transfer dealings, and there's some really interesting analysis between Christian, between Martin, and between Chris Bowd as well. So lots to catch up on. We'll be back next week as always. Christopher Sermani, pleasure as always, my friend.
Pleasure as always to be here. Thanks very much, Christopher.
Lorenzo, I'll see you on Monday for the agenda.
Yes, I've definitely remembered that and knew about that.
Yes, absolutely. Sweet, see you on Monday for the agenda. This has been fantastic. Christopher Sermani, Lorenzo Pacitti, I'm Chris Gallagher. This has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.